Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. News.
The President's office has revealed the names of 29 people who have been awarded high state distinctions on Czechoslovak Independence Day. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš urged Czechs to get vaccinated and thanked the public for their trust during his 4 years in office. And the hot candidate for health minister, Vlastimil Válek, has said local lockdowns of unvaccinated people over 60 are likely. President Miloš Zeman has bestowed high state honours on 29 people, his office announced on Thursday evening. Normally, the head of state hands out honours on October 28th, though with Mr. Zeman currently in hospital, the event has been postponed until January 1st. Five people are to receive the highest Czech honour, the Order of the White Lion, including actress Irina Bohdalová, and astronaut and former ambassador to Russia, Vladimir Remek. The medal will go in memoriam to businessman Petr Kellner, World War II pilot Alexander Hess, and UK politician Alfred Duff Cooper, who resigned in protest at the Munich Agreement. Meanwhile, in an address to the nation on the evening of the country's Independence Day, the Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš said that while the outlook for the future was not optimistic, Czechs had got through worse times. Mr. Babiš said that the nation had always stuck together in the darkest periods. The Prime Minister repeatedly called for people to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Referencing his departure from the post, he thanked the public for their trust during his time in office and said he hoped the new Czech government would fight for the country's interests. Laboratories in the Czech Republic registered 4,348 new cases of COVID-19 on Thursday, which is a record number of cases given the fact that it was a public holiday. There are now 1,304 people hospitalized with COVID, of whom 172 are in intensive care. On average, the country has 276 new cases per 100,000 inhabitants. The number of cases has seen a steep rise in the past few days. In the course of the past 4 days, the number of new cases reached 20,760, which amounts to an average of over 5,000 cases a day. Meanwhile, interest in getting a COVID vaccine has been growing. 52,000 people got their first jab this week. The Czech Republic is on the brink of local lockdowns, and it is very likely that they will occur in the second half of November, according to Vlastimil Válek, who is slated to become the country's next health minister. Interviewed by Politalk, Válek said that in his view, a certain form of closure will be unavoidable in the Moravia-Silesia region, where there is a very low rate of inoculation. He said that in such a case, he would be in favour of imposing a lockdown on unvaccinated people over the age of 60. The České Budějovice city police have suspended an officer who punched a woman on Senovážně náměstí on Wednesday evening. He then knocked to the ground, kicked and handcuffed a bystander who stood up for the woman. The Daily Mladá Fronta Dnes drew attention to the case after obtaining a video of the incident made by a random witness. The video shows that neither the woman nor the man attacked the officer. They merely argued with him. A spokesperson for the city police said the case was being investigated and the aggressive officer would almost certainly be sacked. The Czech economy grew by 2.8% year-on-year in the third quarter, according to data released by the Czech Statistics Office. Compared to the previous quarter, gross domestic product increased by 1.4%. The growth was driven mainly by domestic demand. Data from the third quarter indicate that the country's annual economic growth will not exceed 3% and will thus fall below expectations. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. Saturday should be clear to partly cloudy with morning fog in places and day temperatures between 12 and 16 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarová, and that's the end of the news. You are listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in the programme, we'll look at the benefits of Taiwan's largest ever trade mission to the Czech Republic, tell you about a new smart flat project to help the elderly and disabled, and then within our new series on Czech museums, we'll take you to the Škoda Museum in Mladá Boleslav, a car lover's dream. Stay with us. This week marked the visit of Taiwan's largest ever trade mission to the Czech Republic. Aside from awards and speeches that praised the two countries' close relationship, 5 memoranda and 6 cooperation agreements were signed relating to various technology sectors, including electromobility, artificial intelligence, and perhaps most importantly, chip manufacturing. Tom McEncroe has the details.
The Czech Republic is one of the top 5 most interesting technology investment partners of Taiwan in Europe, according to the chairman of the Czech-Taiwanese Chamber of Commerce, Pavel Givish. He told Czech Radio that last year's visit by a Czech delegation to Taiwan, which was led by Senate Speaker Miloš Vystrčil, helped increase sympathies between the two countries while also boosting trust for potential business cooperation.
Taiwan is a democratic country with an open, export-focused economy. Its industry is based around small and medium-sized enterprises, which make up 85% of Taiwan's economy. This makes Taiwan a very similar economy to our own, which in turn means that it is easy for us to connect small, specialized businesses that are particularly interested in technology.
Members of the Taiwanese business mission met with their Czech counterparts this week to discuss potential areas of technological cooperation. Chips were especially in the centre of focus for the Czech side, as the country's car manufacturing sector, like that in the rest of Europe, is being forced to halt production due to an international chip shortage. Taiwan, which houses the world's most valuable semiconductor company, is seen as potentially a useful source of know-how for Czechia and Europe at large. Pavel Givish told Czech Radio that the Czech Republic is among the few countries in Europe that were able to host Taiwanese producers and manufacturers of semiconductors.
They came to find out how we are doing and what is our state of readiness. Our association assembled relevant Czech manufacturers who could become a component of this subcontractor technology chain. In other words, this first step was successful. There is no deadline for a decision, but we should make sure to send a business and technology delegation to Taiwan again and continue with talks.
Pavel Fischer, who was one of the senators that joined the Czech delegation that travelled to Taiwan last year, told Czech Radio that semiconductors were not the only important area of tech cooperation discussed.
There's also potential for cooperation in space technologies and 5G networks, another important component for achieving prosperity and the rule of law. Also, on the EU level, the time has come to start negotiating an investment agreement. Last week, MPs in the European Parliament voted overwhelmingly in favor of a resolution for cooperation with Taiwan.
Closer relations with Taiwan also mean a potential for the further cooling of relations with China, of course, something of which Czechs were reminded earlier this week when the Chinese embassy in Prague issued a condemnation of the Czech Senate's decision to host the Taiwanese delegation and threatened countermeasures. However, Pavel Givish says that there is relatively little threat for normal Czech companies to conduct business with Taiwan.
I think that the average Czech business does not need to be concerned. China's behavior is a standard case of economic blackmail for political reasons. China basically can't hurt us in this regard. However, large trade deals on which China has political influence are under threat.
Tom McEncroe with that report. And moving on now from business cooperation to lifestyle. The Technical University of Ostrava has developed a smart flat to help the elderly age in place and make life easier for handicapped people. Researchers are now testing out the system with the help of volunteers who will live in outfitted model flats under constant surveillance, as Brian Kennedy reports.
At first glance, the laboratory apartment is no different than any other modern flat, but attached to every kitchen cabinet drawer, every appliance, door, and scores of other places are sensors sending back data to the researchers. Its current occupant is a volunteer student lab rat named David Ochka, who has agreed to stay in the flat for at least a month, alone.
It really is a strange feeling to know that you're being monitored constantly, every step you take, every cabinet or door you open, when you open the refrigerator as well. Everyone who has access to the data knows what action you took and when. That feeling of knowing you are being monitored and at the same time being all alone is sometimes a bit oppressive. But from a professional perspective, when you look at the data and can see that there really isn't anyone else in the building, that everything is fine, that, on the other hand, has a calming effect.
Apart from all modern conveniences, the home care flats are outfitted with electronic drug dispensers, timers, visually controlled eyeglasses, and a host of other automated gadgets. So says Dr. Martin Czerny of the university's Faculty of Electrical Engineering and Informatics.
There really are quite a lot of technologies installed and placed throughout the apartment, from the fields of telemedicine, assisted living, and in use in facilities for people with various disabilities.
Student volunteer David Ochka will be leaving the laboratory apartment at the close of this week, and the Technical University of Ostrava researchers are already tweaking the system based on data his actions generated. But Dr. Czerny says they are now looking for a senior citizen who will volunteer to live in the home care flat so as to get a better picture of how the system serves the needs of intended beneficiaries. It could also influence the design of user interfaces for people with disabilities.
The senior volunteer won't be living here permanently. We expect we will need a month or 6 weeks at most so that we can study as much data as possible, evaluate what technology they will find helpful in real life.
The home care flat is likely to be the first of many assisted living innovations coming from the Technical University of Ostrava, which recently opened a new biomedical assistive technology branch of study. It focuses exclusively on practical applications of technology in the medical and healthcare sectors.
Brian Kennedy with that report. A reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague International, the external service of Czech Radio, where it's now time for our main feature. A popular mainstream car brand today, Škoda Auto, also boasts one of the oldest histories among any of the still operating car manufacturers. In the Škoda Museum in Mladá Boleslav, just outside Prague, the car maker puts its rich history on display in an exhibition that is especially likely to appeal to aspiring engineers. Tom McEncrow was there and has this report.
Whether you park your car or just walk towards the entrance of the Škoda Auto Museum in Mladá Boleslav, the first thing that greets you is a pair of statues depicting the founders of the famous car brand. Václav Laurin and Václav Klement were two Czechs living in Austro-Hungarian Bohemia at the turn of the 19th and 20th centuries. The story goes that Klement bought a Germania bicycle from the Dresden-based company Seidel and Naumann in 1894. The bicycle soon broke, and so Klement wrote to the company's local branch in Bohemia asking for it to be repaired. However, the company gave him a short reply, stating that the customer must address them in a coherent language, in other words, German. Klement felt so insulted by the reply that he decided to start developing his own bicycles with his friend Václav Laurin. The name they chose for their bike was Slavia, and it is indeed a bicycle that stands right by the entrance at the beginning of the exhibition. Next to it, in a contrast of tradition and modernity that is frequent in this museum, stands Škoda's Fabia Rally 2 Evo model, the latest technological development of the car brand's World Rally Championship team.
As we deposit our coats at the reception, we're greeted by the museum's curator, Michal Velebny, and taken on a tour. Rather than bicycles, the initial stage of the tour contains early forms of motorbikes, the machines that Lauren and Clement started focusing on shortly after they founded the company in 1895. Michal Velebny points to the motorcycle exhibits, many of which were ridden by the company founders themselves.
The first motorcycle types, A and B, were financially successful from the start. Václav Klement was a very savvy businessman and managed to secure the sale of several of the company's motorcycles in England, already at this early stage in the company's history. He also personally took part in several competitions, such as the Paris to Berlin or Paris to Vienna races. The motorcycles were also successful in competitions that required uphill riding. The A and B types were the breakthrough models for Lauren and Clement, but it was the CCR two-cylinder motorcycle with which they crowned their triumph. It won the 1905 Coupe Internationale in France. Back then, the tournament was a sort of unofficial motorcycling world championship. Václav Klement was very proud of this victory and would mention it in his memoirs. It was one of the greatest successes of his life as a businessman.
After winning the title, the company soon started marketing their machines with the slogan, "Lauren and Clement is the best brand in the world." They also entered the automobile market that same year with the 7-horsepower Voiturette A. This model, which can be found in the museum, was another success, says Mr. Velebny.
It was bought by rich customers from the ranks of the nobility, but there were also smaller models made for doctors and the middle classes. Initial sales always first took place on the domestic market, but the company was very much based around exports. In the period before the First World War, Lauren and Clement sold a third of their vehicles in Austria-Hungary, a third in Russia, and the remaining third in other countries abroad. What's interesting is that already at this early stage, some of their vehicles appeared in Japan, China, and New Zealand. They did have a worldwide reach.
It is with the Voiturette A that the main automobile exhibit of the Škoda Museum begins. Dozens of cars are arrayed in the museum's Great Hall, tracking the chronological development from early two-seaters to modern hybrid and electric mass consumer vehicles. Several of the oldest cars on show at the museum still display the original Lauren and Clement logo, which was used for the first 3 decades before the company was purchased in the 1920s by one of the largest industrial enterprises in Europe, the Škoda Works. One of the most lasting consequences of this merger was the development of the arrowhead Škoda car logo that we all know today. Its history is explained in the section of the museum tour devoted to the company's tradition, says Michal Velebny, as he leads me towards an array of photos, documents and design prototypes.
You can see the development of our company's logo and its name in this vitrine. First, there was a Slavia factory focused on manufacturing bicycles and motorbikes. It was called Slavia and Lauren and Clement, Lana Boleslav. The name of the factory was depicted in the letters L and K. A laurel wreath surrounding the L and K was added after the first motorsports successes. Once Lauren and Clement merged with Škoda in 1925, some models started bearing the symbol of a winged arrow, while others still had the L and K logo. The motif of the winged arrow eventually became permanent and marks Škoda vehicles until today. The wings of the arrow symbolize expansion, the eye sharpness, the arrow a true aim. The logo's color also changed throughout time. In 1991, the company used a green logo covered in laurel wreaths. Today, our logo has more of a sharp crystal design.
The evolution in logo designs and of the various engines that Škoda used is also visible as we pass through the vehicle exhibition itself. Some of the engines are anatomically dissected next to the cars, and it is as we study one of them that Michal Velebny starts pointing with excitement at several nearby cars.
We're now standing next to several automobiles that have a significant place in the history of the Škoda brand. Here's the first ever Škoda Octavia model, which was manufactured between the years 1956 to 1964. This is the last Škoda car to feature the backbone chassis that was used successfully in pre-war designs. The next model we see is the Škoda 1000MB, which replaced the Octavia in 1974. This was another groundbreaking model in the company's history. It was the first car to have a self-supporting body. The axles and the unit was mounted directly in the body. It also encompassed a big concept change, because the engine moved back. This concept remained the standard design for Škoda cars until the end of the 1980s. Škoda 105, 120 až 130
až do konce 80. let. It is not just a passion for engineering that makes Michal Velebný attached to the vehicles on show. The museum's curator is a member of the Velebný clan, which has been tied to the Škoda brand since the 1920s. It was Michal Velebný's grandfather, Joseph, who led the company's chassis design department after World War II and was responsible for the development of the many elegant Škoda designs between the 40s and the 60s. Meanwhile, his father, Dušan, was in charge of the company's research and development department. As we walk towards the curator's office, we pass another feature of the Škoda Museum, an exhibit of bronze sculptures crafted by the famous Czech provocateur artist David Černý. The 12 sculptures depict scenes from Czech history and culture that are stylized to look like the traditional Czech wood-carved nativity scenes. The set was originally made for the Expo 2000 exhibition in Wolfsburg. With high ceilings, wide halls, and interactive panels accompanying the exhibits, the whole museum building has a very modern feel. But do not be fooled by its recent renovation. The Škoda Museum building is the original location of the oldest part of the Lauren and Clement factory in Mladá Boleslav. Nevertheless, the building was only converted into a museum in 1995. The origins of the company museum stretch far further in time, says Mr. Velebný.
The company used historical vehicles for propagation purposes already from its early days. In fact, the Laurent and Clement voiturette automobile, the first four-wheel vehicle that Škoda made, was in the company's possession since the 1930s. Then, at the beginning of the 1960s, Škoda bought two further Lauren and Clement cars. In 1968, the company decided to maintain a collection of its historical vehicles and started posting ads into newspapers looking for sellers. They received a lot of offers, so the marketing department started visiting prospective sellers and documenting the condition of the vehicles that were on offer. From 1968 until 1974, Škoda bought roughly 60 cars and motorcycles. This purchase secured the foundation of today's museum collection. We're still working on expanding it. Every year we get the latest models from the current production line, as well as design studies. We currently have 350 exhibits, which are mainly cars. 350 exemplářů
kol, motocyklů a automobilů hlavně. For those who want to get a feel for what it was like to drive one of the original models, there is also a virtual driving opportunity, says the museum curator.
With the help of virtual reality glasses, you can take a drive through a 1920s Prague setting in the Lauren and Clement 110. We have a whole selection of 1930s cars for driving in virtual reality. You can choose the Škoda 422 or 860 models, select the color and setup. There is also information on how much such a vehicle would cost. Aside from the interactive panels and virtual car rides, we also have a small cinema where we show a short film detailing the production line process. During thematic exhibitions, the cinema always also plays accompanying films.
Less than an hour's drive from Prague, Škoda Museum in Mladá Boleslav used to welcome an average of 280,000 visitors a year before the onset of the coronavirus pandemic. The museum was forced to close for a time when the epidemiological situation was at its worst in the country, but it reopened this summer. A virtual tour is now also available online on the museum's website. A joint tour of the museum and of the Škoda car manufacturing plant used to be on offer as well, but it is currently still on hold due to the pandemic. As we walk through the section of the museum dedicated to Škoda's accomplishments in the area of motorsport, we run into several visitors studying the 1949 Škoda Sport model, the last ever Czech car to compete at the 24-hour Le Mans endurance race. We catch an older man from Prague enthusiastically discussing the car with his son.
I'm always very impressed by the museum. I've been here many times. The style feels a bit German, very precise, and the exhibits are amazing. They keep a fresh, constantly changing range of car exhibits, which they renovate in the assembly hall.
His son, a student, says that he is especially interested in the design aspect of the cars on show.
It is amazing that you can see how the car models gradually evolved. Personally, I liked the old models the most. People were so precise back then.
Passing the 1949 aluminium Škoda Sport, we enter the assembly hall, where several cars from various decades of Škoda's 100-year-long history are being renovated in front of visitors. Museum curator Michal Velebný says he has a surprise in store as he leads us to a door at the back. An even bigger hall appears. This, Michal Velebný says, is the museum's multi-purpose hall, where screenings, conferences and several other Škoda Auto events are held. The large space, devoid of the old-timers so frequent in the previous sections of the exhibition, feels very modern. But this is not the end of the journey. As we pass the big conference screen, we enter through a small door into the Škoda Auto archives. Surrounded by mountains of well-ordered boxes, Michal Velebný shows us one of the very earliest Lorin and Clement designs, hand-drawn in the early 1900s.
We have a wide array of documents in this archive, which is a part of the museum. You can find designs and records stretching back to the earliest days of the company here. The materials we keep here are both a resource for us, but also for researchers looking into the history.
Kteří k nám chodí studovat historii a krásně se to všechno prolíná.
Below the sharp drawing lines and associated notes, one can read the handwritten name of Václav Laurin. The co-founder and engineer of Laurin and Clement would have been around 40 years old at the time, perhaps fresh off the victory at the 1905 Coupe Internationale. In 1907, the company produced 25 cars. 100 years later, that figure is regularly close to a million.
Tom McEncroe with that report from the Škoda Auto Museum. And I'm afraid it's brought us to the end of today's programme from Prague. We'll be back same time tomorrow. But before I go, opera buffs, please take note, we'll be introducing Kateřina Knižíková, currently one of the most sought-after Czech opera singers, at the weekend. We'll have an interview with her on Saturday, and you can hear her latest CD on Radio Prague's Sunday music programme. So do check it out. You'll find everything at radio.cz. Should you like to contact us, then our email address is english@radio.cz. And remember, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well. This is Daniela Lazarová saying thanks for listening and take care.